Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here today with Russell Chianelli as the co-host, and we're going to be talking to a professor of chemical engineering and professor of materials science from Texas A&M in the personage of Professor Perla Balbuena. She's interested in computer modeling of batteries and how do batteries function and where are we going to make batteries of the future. So, Perla, welcome very much to Science Studio.
Thank you very much.
Yes, welcome to Science Studio. And tell us, when you were a young girl, how did you get attracted to engineering?
Okay. I grew up in Argentina, and initially I didn't know that I was attracted to engineering. But I was attracted to sciences in general, math and chemistry, and probably that triggered me to pick one of the... It was called exact sciences, and that the engineering areas were all inside that group of exact sciences. So I entered into chemical engineering, and the first, the initial years were what I really liked, so the math and the chemistry and physics and all of that. The last years were not that interesting to me because it was more focused on the chemical engineering, what is traditional chemical engineering. But the story that I can tell you is that chemical engineering has changed a lot since the beginnings, since my beginnings, actually. That was in the 70s or early 80s to now, and it has moved from process design to design of products, and that's what I am interested on.
When you were, you said initially that you were interested in all sciences, and can you tell our audience how you distinguish between chemistry and chemical engineering?
Yes, of course. Chemistry in general is focused on the molecular aspects, on the electronic aspects, on the microscopic of the phenomena taking place at a really, really Armstrong level, I could say. Whereas chemical engineering takes materials at a more macroscopic model and tries to convert them into products that could be used for people.
One of the features that, you know, is interesting about your history is the fact that, you know, first of all, you come from Argentina, and I'm not sure the emphasis that's put on bringing females into engineering and science. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your degree was several years ago, so you must have been one of the earlier females to be studying in Argentina, this level of activity.
Yes, in the engineering field, the group of female students was really a minority at those times. For example, in my class, we were 5 out of 40, more or less. But interestingly, in the sciences, like in physics or chemistry, the group of female students was much higher. I cannot explain that because if I compare that statistics to what happens here, it's different.
Right.
But it used to be, I don't know if that has changed or not over there, but it used to be that the group of female students in those fields, in physics, chemistry, well, traditionally biology is also kind of female field, right? But the hard exact sciences like physics and chemistry had a high percent of female at those times, but not in engineering.
I remember when I first went down to Mexico City, to UNAM, and then the Metropolitana and the other big universities there, I was amazed by just how many female professors of chemistry and physics.
Yeah.
And I made the point, I said, you know, North America, that is in the United States, Canada,
yes,
England, that's not this large number of female faculty.
Yes.
And they simply looked me in the eye and said, well, Keith, because, you know, we don't get paid very much. And so we send our husbands out to get real money and we take the academic positions. And there was a truth behind that humor.
Uh-huh. Well, I am not sure if that is...
It's changed, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because when we choose what to study, we are not thinking really about being paid, because you are not being paid being a student. So, especially in South America, the university is free. So... you don't care about money at those times. Either you have a little shop that can keep your whatever are your needs, but you don't care too much about money. But once you graduate, you start to think about why I choose this.
But it's pretty interesting, because that means you're really following your interest.
Yeah, that's right. I think that is true, really. And on the other hand, I think that maybe the reason for the high percent of female over there is that, in spite of what people believe, there is not such a bias against women in South America like maybe is a little bit more here. Yes.
Well, tell us then. Anyway, you got your degrees. Did you study in North America, or all your degrees from Argentina?
No, I study in North America also. Yeah, I got a master's degree at the University of Pennsylvania, and then a PhD at the University of Texas at Austin.
Yeah. And now you're at Texas A&M, so you're on
yes.
the other side of the
yeah, that's right.
of the divide.
That's right. Yeah, my students, when they come to my office, and especially the undergraduate students, when they come, they say, "Oh, you are from Austin? I didn't know that." And they don't like it.
Start to tell us a little bit about what's really exciting you in terms of your research and your activity as a professor of chemical engineering and materials science.
Yes. Well, many things. I really like my job. I enjoy it. What I care really is about the understanding of processes, the understanding of fabrication of materials. How can we improve products based on development of new materials? And all of that has something to do with what's going on at the microscopic level. So that's how it connects to what I said before, that actually I am interested in engineering, but I care about the details. So that's how I became a scientist, because I need to know what's going on at the very detailed level.
So you're very interdisciplinary.
I am right now, yes. That's right. Yes, I became.
Yeah.
I became interdisciplinary. Actually, when I did my PhD, I had two advisors, one from chemical engineering and one from chemistry, and so that's how I became more in the area of simulations, for example, molecular simulations.
So I know that you're very active and interested in this whole area of batteries, and,
yes.
and this is. You know, we've had batteries around for a long, long time,
yes.
but we need them to be smaller, more powerful, better storage, better
yes.
everything.
Yes.
Tell us about your focus in the area of battery
right.
technology.
Right. Yes, my focus, I started to work in batteries and electrochemical systems in general when I started my career in the U.S., my academic career, that was at the University of South Carolina in 1997. And over there was a strong department on electrochemical, focusing on electrochemical engineering in general. And that's how I became involved with batteries and fuel cells. And at that time, I was studying materials for batteries, like electrodes, and especially the interfacial problems between the materials that constitute the electrodes, where the chemical reactions take place, and the electrolyte, that is usually a liquid, or it could be a polymer that is in contact with that. And I was doing that, and that work was somehow was of interest to a company from Japan and they look at my work through the website, and then they came, and then we met at the at one of the conferences, and then they became interested in my work, and they started to support my work. At that time, I got the Career Award from NSF, and so everything became one thing. I put together the work that I was doing for Career, and this work supported by Mitsubishi. And the idea was that they were interested in improving the electrolyte. So the electrolyte is the liquid phase or the solid phase that is in contact
with for our audience, let's say, I know you like lithium batteries.
Yeah, lithium batteries.
So you
batteries.
Have lithium metal on one side as an anode.
Right.
And then you have something as a cathode.
Exactly.
And then you have some electrolyte that
in
allows you
middle.
To discharge the battery mm-hmm. and get energy
yes.
out.
Yes.
So
what is my contribution?
Well, what is the cathode that you're working with, and what is the electrolyte
okay.
typically?
The cathode is a metal oxide that contains lithium. The anode, it used to be a carbon material, just carbon. Right now is silicon, the anode I am working with. And the electrolyte is a liquid. But the intention of that company was to improve the electrolyte. Improving the electrolyte improves all the chemistry of the battery. So it's crucial. And that is what I am still working on. But right now I'm supported by DOE, and they want us to study the silicon anode. So now we want to use silicon instead of carbon. Why? Because silicon can store a lot more lithium than carbon does.
It's so you put the lithium on the silicon.
Yes,
and then when you discharge, the lithium goes over.
Right.
And then when you recharge, it goes back.
Right, exactly. It goes back and forth between the two electrodes.
So that is a surface phenomenon? Or does the lithium intercalate into the...
It intercalates.
So
yes.
It's not just on the surface?
No, it's not just on the surface,
okay.
Yes. And it intercalates in silicon, and in actually the nice crystalline structure that we know about silicon, it becomes destroyed when lithium goes inside. It alloys with silicon. And so there are a lot of problems, practical problems, because that anode mechanically becomes unstable and it doesn't last. So that is one of the main things that we are interested on, in trying to extend the lifetime of the battery.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pennell, here with Russell Chianelli and Professor Perla Balbuena from Texas A&M, Professor of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science, and we're delving into what goes on in a battery. We'll be back in one moment.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog.
And I'm Dr. David Niesel. Today, the abuse of prescription drugs is second only to marijuana and alcohol for Americans 14 and older. The Drug Enforcement Agency is calling it an epidemic, so we're presenting you with a top 10 list.
They fall under three categories: opioids for pain, depressants of the central nervous system, and stimulants for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD.
75% of all pharmaceutical overdose deaths are from opioids, and the death rate has increased for the past decade. The number one abused drug, OxyContin, comes from this category. So does number 9, Opana ER, for severe and chronic pain. Number 2 is Suboxone, which helps with opioid dependence.
Depressants comprise 4 of the top 10 abused prescription drugs. Number 10 is Xanax, with street names like Zany and Blue Footballs. It's for anxiety, but college students call it the party drug because it creates a sense of well-being.
The other depressants are Zoloft, a mood-altering drug, and sleeping aids Lunesta and Ambien. When abused, these drugs cause hallucinations.
The rest are stimulants and include Adderall, which is commonly used for ADHD. College students abuse it to stay awake and focus intensely for final examinations.
Ritalin is a similar drug and is number 5, while Concerta comes in at 3. These drugs can cause irregular heartbeat, heart failure, seizures, and paranoia or hostility.
While we shouldn't outlaw these drugs, we do need to regulate and educate. Some people may be innocently sharing their prescription drugs, while users may be ignorant to the full implications of their abusive habits.
We are Drs. David Neisel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Russell Chianelli, Professor Bella Balbuena, Texas A&M, talking about materials of batteries and different types of anodes and cathodes. Russell.
Yeah, I know that the lithium battery has been around for quite a while because I worked on it myself in the past. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues is they're very light compared to your lead acid, and this would be the most chosen way to run an electric vehicle was with lithium batteries. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the problems over the years, when we're talking about electrolyte, I can remember when I worked on it, it was lithium perchlorate and ether, mm-hmm. and it used to blow up every once in a while.
Yeah.
So what kind of electrolytes do they have now that don't blow up?
Right, yeah. Instead of the lithium perchlorate, there is another salt being used that is lithium PF6. It's a fluorinated salt, and that doesn't have those problems, at least in the in a certain range of conditions. Right?
And what is the liquid? Is it hydrocarbon?
The liquid is a mixture of organic solvents like ethylene carbonate, propylene carbonate, and others.
And the reason for that is you can't use water because the lithium would react.
Of course, yes. So these organic liquids are really useful for that. They have a lot of good properties, but there are other problems like, one that I focus on is that there is an unwanted reaction that is the electrode is in some, under some conditions can reduce, meaning giving electrons to the electrolyte. And that reaction causes opening the ring of these molecules that are cyclic molecules.
So it transforms one chemical species to another.
Exactly.
And the properties of the electrolyte degrade, et cetera,
exactly,
et cetera.
Exactly. And actually it forms like a film at the surface of the electrode.
Close the whole thing down.
It depends.
Right.
It depends on the electrolyte, on the chemistry of the electrolyte. Sometimes it's just a protective film over the electrode, and it works very well. And that's why people, experimentalists, just try by trial and error what type of additives need to be included, so that this film is really protective and not.
So that's very experimental. So you've got a team of people, trial and error, little bit of this, little bit of that, hocus pocus, do a spell, and it out comes nicely. Mm-hmm. But your end of the bargain is to do the calculations to model.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you model ahead of the researchers doing the experiments, or do you wait for the results from the experimentalists?
No,
which way does it happen? Or both ways?
Right now, fortunately, it has started to be in parallel. So we do the calculations, they do the experiments, and then we meet together.
Well, let me ask that, then. It's very interesting because one of the things, if you're going to put this battery in a car, you want to have the cycle life, how many times you charge, discharge, and so on. Can you do the cycle life in the computer?
That's tough, but we are trying. We are trying. For the cycle life, then you cannot use, of course, any ab initio, so very quantum mechanical study, because it will take very, very long computing times. But we can use different type of modeling. And that's what we are trying to do, use multi-scale modeling. So going on to other type of models that allow us to simplify somehow our
system. Well, some of the things that will decrease the cycle life are the films that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I remember is dendrite formations where the lithium grows crystals. What's the best cycle life we can get from a lithium battery now?
Well, it depends on the materials that you choose, of course. But dendrites occur in the lithium metal, electrodes. Yes. When you use carbon anodes, for example,
you don't get it.
You don't get those. And if you choose the proper electrolyte with carbon anodes, that works pretty well. That's most of our devices, cell phones and batteries, they use that type of batteries. But the downside is that the storage capacity is not that great. That's why we are looking into other materials that increase that storage capacity.
Yeah. So are there any lithium batteries that are actually in electric cars now, or are they still using lead-acid batteries?
That I don't know 100% if they are already being used. I'm sure they are being tested, but I don't know if they are already being used. Definitely, we are working with that goal of using them into electrical vehicles, yes.
So, I mean, one of the other points, from a purely practical point of view, we toyed with the idea of buying one of these electric cars, my wife and I. Mm-hmm. And then we realized, you know, that it would take 2 days to get to Albuquerque because we'd have to travel halfway up the road and then get it charged. And so the charging of a discharged battery, what are the people researching to make that a much quicker process? I mean, why is it so long? And what happens if you do it too quickly? And into that area, because that's a crucial practical issue with battery-powered anythings.
Yes. Well, everything has to do with materials and how materials work in these processes. And, yeah, I think you are right. That's one of the problems that everybody is trying to work on. I think most of the research in batteries, not only in the U.S., but also in other countries like in Asia, Japan, China, Korea are very advanced also in this field. And the focus is mostly on trying to optimize the three materials, the two electrodes and the electrolyte. And what you are mentioning, the problem you are mentioning, is most a problem of integration. Then once you have the optimum materials for the three, you have to integrate them, and that has to work harmonically somehow. And that's a huge challenge, and I hope in the near future that could be addressed. We're working on it.
So let's just change topics a little bit, but it's really the same issue. Mm-hmm. We're all very familiar with this Boeing Dreamliner, I think it's called, or Dream Airplane, and they keep on having problems with lithium
with
batteries.
Yeah.
They suddenly start warming up, and then sometimes a little bit of smoke. And even though it's harmless, if you're in an airplane and something's warming up and smoking, you're not very happy.
Yeah,
what's the issue here?
Yeah.
From the engineering, scientific point of view, what's the delicacy here that is reflected?
Yes. The delicacy is there are two aspects. One is the production of gases inside of the battery. It could be due to these unwanted reactions that I was talking about before. So there is a lot of production of CO, CO2 gases, even ethylene inside of the of this battery.
You mean, hang on a minute, that's when it's malfunctioning. That's when something has gone wrong. In the normal cycle, these wouldn't be present.
It could be present, but not in large amount. It would be present in a small amount. But it happens especially if your battery is exposed to high temperatures, for example, under certain conditions of high temperature, that could be.
I mean, just think of it as chemistry. If you had sodium instead of lithium and all these organic electrolytes, you'd have more reactions and things happening. The lithium organic system.
So it's a purity of the materials in many ways.
Well, there can be impurities in it too, but it's a very delicate chemical system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, very there are many, complex.
And complex.
Yes.
There are many chemical reactions.
Yes, many.
Where
many.
If you actually purify the ingredients to the highest possible level, the reaction doesn't work. I mean, it's true. I mean, if you take magnesium as one of the elements, it only works in many ways because there's impurities, PPMs, PPBs perhaps, of lithium in there. All right, and it's those trace impurities which make the chemistry go on. So I guess I've sort of come to understand
it. It's fairly complex, and one of the things that our audience should understand, which Dr. Panel was saying he couldn't go because he had to charge, you know, think of lead and then think of lithium, the weight difference. And you can put in maybe 10 times more lithium into the same weight, maybe more, and therefore you can have more electricity stored and you don't have to stop as much.
Right, right. Yes,
I think that's one of the issues. And the other issue is, aren't there some solid electrolytes that people look at?
Yes. Actually, instead of these organic electrolytes, organic liquid electrolytes, people are looking into polymers. Polymers are interesting materials that could control certain type of problems in the battery. However, the conductivity is a problem because lithium ions must be conducted from one side to the other, as we said before, and the material in between has to play that role, and that's the problem with the polymers.
We've just got a few minutes, and I want to know if, because of your expertise, because of your interest, because of your understanding, are you into non-traditional ways of getting electricity in your own house? Do you have solar panels, and are you storing the energy in novel batteries, or is this all an academic exercise? Yeah, I mean, in your own personal life.
I only store energy when I go to the garden and do some gardening.
So myself, you like to garden?
Yeah, I do. But no, I don't have any. So far, I don't have any device that uses solar energy at home. I could, because in Texas,
it's absolutely
that's free.
Just 6 months ago, we installed solar panels on our roof, and I go out now every evening just before the sun goes down, while I can still see the meter, to find how many kilowatt hours I've produced. And I think the record so far that I remember is about 40 kilowatt hours in a day. Sometimes it's only about 28, depending upon the cloud cover. But it's fascinating.
Is it paying for itself?
Oh, absolutely. Once we had problems in fixing into the grid, because the power coming in was fluctuating, and if it fluctuated too big, then the solar cell system would shut down. So they had to do some modifications. But now, you know, I'm making money. Well, making a lot, but I'm not spending any. And it was great fun. But let's go back to your garden. I mean, I'm interested. Do you like a garden for flowers, or do you want vegetables like broccoli? I mean, what's the garden to do for you?
I like flowers and I like trees.
Trees.
I love trees, yes.
Right.
Yes. I love big trees, actually. I don't have many at home. I have a couple that I planted.
How long have you been there in the garden? How many years you watched the tree grow?
10 years.
10 years.
Yes.
So you can get some pretty big trees in 10
years. Yeah, I hope so, yes. Yes, right now the small trees that we planted, now they are really big, yes. And I like them. I like because they attract birds, and I love birds as well.
Right.
Good.
Well, I think it's very nice to have you on Science Studio.
Yes.
So thanks so much telling about batteries, and next time maybe you can tell us about hydrogen storage.
Indeed. Pela Babuena, Texas A&M Professor of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a delight. And thanks to the listeners out there. And without you, there's no program. There is a program, so there must be listeners. Thank you very much.
I'm Nomi Rojas with your Synapse Flash. Emergence Health Network opened a new observation unit at 1600 Montana Avenue. The unit is the first of its kind in El Paso County and Las Cruces. It provides people who are having an urgent mental health crisis with a place to get through the episode while being observed by medical professionals. The unit is intended to divert people from being taken to jail or the emergency room. Read more at mcasynapse.org.